Case number 12-1008 et al. T.C. Ravenswood, LLC, Petitioner v. Federal Energy Regulatory Commission. Mr. Wiseman for Petitioner T.C. Ravenswood. Mr. Fallon for Petitioner NRG Companies. Ms. Anakil for Respondent FERC. And Mr. Lochney for Intervenor, City of New York.
May it please the Court, I'm Kenneth Wiseman representing Ravenswood. I'll be dividing my time this morning with Mr. Fallon representing NRG, and he'll be addressing the property tax issue. And we'd like to split our time 10 minutes and 2 minutes respectively for our initial arguments and reserving 2 minutes and 1 minute respectively for rebuttal. FERC suspended the rate at issue here for 7.5 months, which is in excess of the 5 months permitted under the Federal Power Act. FERC also violated its policy in suspending the rate
I thought they suspended it for 5 months.
They said that they suspended it for 5 months,
isn't that what the order says?
I'm sorry?
Isn't that what the order says?
The order says that, but the five-month period expired on June 28, 2011. Mm-hmm. In fact, because of subsequent events, the existing rate remained in effect until September 15th, 2011, and FERC specifically ordered that the existing rates stay in effect during that extended period. So while they initially said, in effect, said in multiple places that they were suspending the rate for a maximum of 5 months, in fact, they actually suspended it for 7.5 months.
But is it really a suspension when they accepted the second filing and late March that seemed to be taken out of the box of suspension altogether?
That is really the key issue here, exactly. And what happened on March 28th, 2011, the New York ISO filed the compliance filing to comply with the January 28 order to extend the existing rate. In that compliance filing, the New York ISO said that the following day it would be filing another compliance filing to comply with the modifications required by the commission to the proposed rate that had been ordered in the January 28 order. On March 29, 2011, the very next day, the NYISO made that filing. And when it made that filing, it specifically said what it was intending to do was to have that rate put into effect for the upcoming summer capability season, which was May 1. And I think actually the language of that filing is particularly important here. And I make the point that this is a filing that FERC did not identify in its brief to this court. But in the March 28 filing, the New York ISO said and this is at Joint Appendix page 856, quote, "In compliance with the Commission's January 28, 2011 order on the NYISO's filing proposing update installed capacity demand curves for capability years 2011, 2012, 2012, 2013, 2013, 2014, and the Commission's March 9, 2011 order on the NYISO's request for clarification, the NYISO respectfully submits this compliance filing." And it goes on to say that the following day it will submit the compliance filing to put the modified rates into effect. When FERC addressed the modified filing in its order on April 4th, 2011, FERC said, and this is at Joint Appendix 915, initially it referred to the March 28 filing to extend the existing rate, and it said, quote, "We find that NYISO's filing reflects ministerial changes to the services tariff in order to maintain the existing ICAP demand curves beyond April 30, 2011, consistent with the January 28, 2011 order, until replaced by rates effective on a date set when the Commission acts on NYISO's filing to comply with the January 28, 2011 order, which NYISO recently filed on March 29, 2011. So it was only after we filed a request for a hearing that FERC came up with a recharacterization, both of the NYISO's filing and of its own order, to say, no, the March 28 filing superseded the proposed rate. In fact, that argument is inconsistent with the precise language used by NYISO in its filings with the Commission and by the Commission itself in its April 4, 2011 order.
If you read the March 28th and 29th orders together, as they want to, the 29th order did have a request for flexible effective dates.
The March 29th filing actually specifically requests that those rates be put into place in effect for the upcoming summer capability season, which began on May 1, 2011. So it was always NYISO's intent from the very beginning that the proposed rate, as modified by the Commission's order, would go into effect. It was never withdrawn. There are very specific regulations, which FERC regulations, which require filing to withdraw a proposed rate. And NYISO never made that filing here. FERC never issued an order requiring or allowing withdrawal of the proposed rate. FERC simply has recharacterized what is said in its April 4, 2011 order in the NYISO's filings to come up with a post hoc justification for leaving the existing rate in effect for 7.5 months.
If NYISO had requested a flexible implementation date or a date in the fall, that would take this out of the suspension issue, correct?
Well, that's a really interesting question, and it goes to what is at the heart of the problem here. What you're alluding to is there are two different regulatory principles at issue. There's the 5-month suspension, maximum suspension period under 205, and there's the fact that a filing utility can choose to implement a rate whenever it chooses to implement that rate. The problem here is that the FERC's system, the structure it's put in place, has turned the FPA Section 205 on its head, where the filing utility, which is the New York ISO, has no financial interest in the outcome of the proceeding. It's not affected whether capacity suppliers are provided an opportunity to earn a just and reasonable return or not. And in fact, the filing utility doesn't provide the services that are being provided. In fact, they're provided by capacity suppliers. So this goes back to the decision in Atlantic City Electric Company. I believe it's a 295 Fed 3rd 1, and then there is a subsequent order at 395 FERC, 329 FERC, 329 Fed 3rd, 856, where the court admonished the commission and said, you can't usurp the right of a filing utility to make its filings under Section 205. Now, we're not asking that structure be eliminated here. That's not part of our request in this case. But it was important for FERC to take into account that it wasn't the filing utility that made the filing here. It didn't have a financial interest in whether the rate was just and reasonable or not. The capacity suppliers did. And if you look at the chart, what happens, it's the vertical bar graph. The proposed rate was less than the rate that FERC found to be just and reasonable. So what happened over time is that there would never have been any harm whatsoever to ratepayers had the proposed rate go into effect, because it was less than the just and reasonable rate. But at the same time, the capacity suppliers, the ones that actually have the financial interest, were detrimentally impacted to in the amount of potentially 11.5, and I'm talking only about NRG and Ravenswood on a combined basis, were injured up to $11.5 million per month for every month that they were permitted to charge only the pre-existing rate. And the $11.5 million is based on the difference between the $15.99 rate that was the existing rate that remained in effect for 7.5 months and the $19.19 rate, which was the compliance filing rate made as a result of FERC's May 19 order on rehearing.
Could you have challenged FERC's March 28th order under Section 206? Arguing that the pre-existing demand curves were no longer just and reasonable?
Yeah, I think you're referring to the April 4, 2011 order. The March 28 was a filing by NYSO.
Right.
Right.
Yes.
Could we have challenged...
Could you have challenged that under 206?
I suppose, but I don't think we filed a request for rehearing of it.
I heard you saying you were powerless here because NYSO has no economic interest in this. You do have the ability under 206 to challenge those rates.
Actually, 206 would not have accomplished the purpose here. Mm-hmm. We did file a request for a hearing of the April 4, 2011 order, mm-hmm. So we did challenge it. Filing under 206 would not have provided any relief because filing under 206, the relief would have been prospective only. And by the time the commission would have made an order, if it even granted the relief, the period would have expired already.
If FERC determined the rate was unjust and unreasonable, you wouldn't get a refund?
Not under 206, uh-huh. because of the ban on retroactive rate making.
Okay. Anything else?
My time is up.
Yeah, your time is up.
Okay. Thank you very much, Tom.
May it please the court. The property tax portion of this case is about inconsistent commission decision making and the commission not justifying that inconsistency. In the Independent Power Producers of New York case, the IPNI case, FERC's precedent on this subject, when the tax laws changed, the commission refused to change the approved rates because the commission said changing rates would create a precedent for further changes as data and circumstances change in New York.
Isn't the timing of the two cases what really makes the difference here? Because there was an element of retroactivity, or at least a different procedural posture than we have here. Here, you were able to, FERC was able to take it into account in time for the next action that would be relevant.
But, Your Honor, in IPNI, if a change in the tax law is going to be the determinative factor, and we believe it was to the commission in this case, that in IPNI, what the commission clearly could have done is to make the change prospective. And at the time of the IPNI complaint decision, there was still approximately two and a half years left in the demand curve reset. So the commission could have made that change prospectively.
But the demand curves in that case were already in effect.
Yes, they were, Your Honor. Yes, they were.
And the suppliers hadn't sought any hearing on that issue in that case.
But Your Honor,
the suppliers
in the IPNI case didn't file for rehearing because at the time of the demand curve reset, all the factors in effect included the property taxes. And we conceded at the time that under New York law at the time, property taxes wouldn't be paid. Mm-hmm. And so the commission didn't include property taxes in the demand curve reset. And so there was no reason for us to file for rehearing of that decision. So we never had to file for rehearing of that decision. It was only after the demand curves had been approved in IPNI that New York changed its tax laws. We then came in and filed our complaint, which the commission denied because it said we have a set of factors and we're going to look at those factors during the 3-year reset. And once we approve a rate based on those factors, we're not just going to pick up one factor after the fact and change the rate. And that's exactly what they did here. I see my time is up. And
thank you.
Thank you.
May it please the court, Jennifer Amarkill for the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission. I'm prepared to address all of the issues in this case, and Mr. Lofney will address only the tax issue. I'll start with the superseding rate. So the March 28th filing is a legitimate new filing that was driven by the New York ISO to fill a gap in its rates because the rates on file were going to expire. And the New York ISO, as the filing utility under the Federal Power Act, has the power to ask for almost any effective date. It has to meet the 60-day notice requirement, but beyond that, the Federal Power Act gives it the power to ask for any effective date. That's what it did here. It had the choice between the 5-month suspension date, which was June 28th, and a longer period of time, and it elected the longer period of time when it made its superseding rate filing. The commission did not treat this like a compliance filing. It granted the 60-day waiver. That's in the April order at paragraph 10, JA-916. It also accepted the filing subject to the March 29th, the outcome of the March 29th filing. In accepting the filing, it's very different from how the commission treats compliance filings, which is a standard based on whether the utility complied with the filing. And you'll also see in the April order that the subject line doesn't say compliance filing. That's at JA-912. That's very different from the compliance orders that were issued in this same proceeding. If you look at JA-1179, that's the October order, the commission says it's a compliance filing in the subject line.
What about my question? Could they have challenged the April 4 order under Section 206?
Yes, Your Honor, they could have, and depending on when they filed their challenge, the refunds could have been given to that date. Although I will add...
To the date of their challenge,
yeah. Yes. Although I will add that refunds in these auction markets are incredibly difficult, and it is true that the Commission does not grant refunds in the auction markets very frequently. And this Court is familiar with this issue. It understands that that recalculating and renewing a bid stack and making assumptions about that bid stack is incredibly difficult to come up with how...
Don't assume that just because we wrote an opinion on this a year ago, we understand it today.
Thank you, Judge Tatel. But more to your point, Judge Tatel, the suppliers are not powerless in this situation just because the New York ISO has the 205 filing rights. They also have 205 filing rights, and that's to make filings for their market-based rates. Mm-hmm. They receive the prices in these auctions and are able to participate in these auctions because they have market-based rates. If they want control over their entire cost of service, they can withdraw their own market-based rates and file those. But also, they're not powerless because they have a voice at the New York ISO. They're a member of a stakeholder group, and there are significant impediments to the New York ISO going forward without agreement from its stakeholder group.
Could you address their argument about West Texas?
Their argument about West Texas being
that
it's not extraordinary circumstances?
Yeah, that under West Texas, the suspension is one day unless one of these two circumstances exists. And I didn't see your brief as challenging that that was the right standard. And I didn't see the commission relying on the 10% factor, so that the rates are excessive. So it seems to be, you know, an extraordinary circumstance case. And I didn't see much in the opinion.
If you look at the March order, note 13, JA-806, this is where the commission said that it used the West Texas standard, and the West Texas standard is the correct standard for the electric side of FERC activity. And the commission found extraordinary circumstances exist in this case because of the unique nature and purpose of the rates.
Right, the unique nature.
And that is combined with the next paragraph, mm-hmm. paragraph 18 on JA807, where the commission talks about the certainty that is required in these auction markets for all market participants, not just the New York City suppliers, but other suppliers and also the consumers.
So then you're saying West Texas doesn't apply at all to auction markets like this? Is that the commission's point?
That where the commission finds that rates are unjust and unreasonable going forward, the proposed rates are unjust and unreasonable, then yes, West Texas would indicate that extraordinary circumstances exist because...
But that wasn't the case here, was it?
Yes.
It was? The unique nature and purpose of the rates filed?
So the unique nature and purpose of the rates is that they are demand curves that feed into a formula that spits out, if you will, a price. Mm-hmm. So given that this is an auction, that mm-hmm. these rates, that these demand curves are used in the auction, and certainty is required when you're going forward with an auction, that those are the extraordinary circumstances.
But wouldn't that apply in any case where a demand curve is an issue?
It may, yes, oh, I think.
Can you give me a situation where it wouldn't?
I can't give you a situation where it wouldn't, but I would say that the standard for looking at and deciding whether the commission made a good decision about the length of the suspension, which is what West Texas policy is about, the length of the suspension, the court is very deferential to the commission, and it doesn't want to intrude
correct,
on the discretion.
West Texas sets forth a pretty specific standard. It's the commission's own standard.
Yes.
And the argument, petitioner's argument here is the commission failed to comply with its own standard.
Yes, and the standard is that the policy, the West Texas policy has to absolutely foreclose the action that the commission took. And because the commission found that there was certainty required in this auction, then that policy is not absolutely foreclosed because of the extraordinary circumstances exception to the West Texas policy.
Well, one of the justifications the commission gave in its brief for the 5 months period was that the differential rise in prices, that is, that they would rise in New York City and drop outside of New York City.
Yes.
But that's not in the commission's decision.
Right, because the commission gets a almost extreme amount of deference in its suspension decisions. So it has to give reasons, but it doesn't have to recite all of the facts that feed into uh-huh. its reasons.
So Sandy, once again, if we were to write a sentence in an opinion explaining why what FERC did here was okay, what would we say other than we owe great deference to the commission? What would we say?
That these are auction rates where certainty is required and mm-hmm. refunds are difficult to provide, and so it meets the extraordinary circumstances exception mm-hmm. in West okay. Texas.
Mm-hmm. All right, thank you.
I also wanted to address why the March 29th filing was not in our brief. The reason for this is we sought to simplify this very complex and both procedurally and technically complex proceeding. But also we were relying on petitioner's brief at page 8 and 24, where they define compliance rate. And they define the compliance rate by referring to the September order, paragraph 86, JA 1133, where the commission accepted the June 20th filing, that was the later compliance filing, and in the next sentence, rejected the March 29th filing as superseded and moot. So when we read petitioner's brief, we thought they were referring to the later compliance filing, the June 20th compliance filing. And that is why we thought it would, we were in agreement that the compliance rate was the rate put into effect on June, put into effect in the September order. So that is why we didn't mention the March 29th filing. And I see that my time is up if you have no further questions.
Oh, thank you.
May it please the court. My name is Bob Lockney, and I'm here on behalf of the City of New York, an intervener in this proceeding. By way of background, New York City has a long history of offering property tax abatements to generators in the city. Despite this history, in its January 28, 2011 order, the Commission found that the existing, then existing property tax abatement program for generators was not, quote unquote, as of right, and therefore too discretionary. The January 2011 order set the stage for a concerted effort to pass legislation in New York State to reestablish the property tax abatement as of right for certain generators within New York City. Specifically, the New York State Legislature, responding directly to the Commission's January 2011 order, passed a law that explicitly states that peaking units in New York City, such as those that are used in the demand curve reset process, will be entitled to full property tax abatement as of right. There's no question about the intent of the statute. In the legislative findings, the legislature stated as follows. The legislature further finds that it is in the best interest of consumers to prevent such impacts on rates by amending the real property law for the purpose of making peaking units eligible as of right under the industrial and commercial abatement program. In order to remove any possible ambiguity whatsoever, the statute defines peaking unit by incorporating the definition of a peaking unit from the New York ISO tariff. Importantly, the legislation was passed and signed into law by Governor Cuomo while petitions for rehearing addressing that very issue, the property tax issue, among others, were still pending at the Commission and before the demand curve was finalized. Based on the evidentiary record before it, and specifically the change in New York law that responded directly to its concern in the January order, the Commission properly granted rehearing on the property tax issue. Thus, the New York City suppliers who complained to the Commission before the January order that the property tax program was too discretionary got exactly what they wanted, an unambiguous as-of-right property tax abatement statute for peaking units. Despite this, they then asked the Commission, and the petitioners now ask this court, to pretend that the statute does not exist and to calculate the cost of a new entry for the peaking unit by including full property taxes. In so doing, the petitioners would increase capacity prices in a manner that would cost the city's residents and businesses hundreds of millions of dollars. These monies would flow to existing generators, many of whom are already enjoying property tax abatements granted under prior programs. In fact, as the Commission noted in its May 2011 order, for more than 25 years, no new electric generating facility has been constructed in the city without receiving a full tax abatement for an extended period. The court should not allow the petitioners to create profits based on an assumption, no property tax abatements, that has absolutely no basis in law or practice. With respect to the issue of the YPNI case raised by Mr. Fallon, I would only note that the commission, when they ruled on this issue, distinguished the case not only procedurally but also substantively by saying that the complainants in the IPNI case had not carried out, had not fulfilled their burden of proof, carried the burden of proof in that case.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Do Mr. Weissman and Mr. Fallon have any time left?
Mr. Weissman and Mr. Fallon do not have any time.
Okay, you can each take 1 minute.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Sure.
2 points. First of all, counsel's explanation of 206 is wrong. If you look at the decision written by Judge Kavanaugh in Anaheim v. FERC, at page 523, it says, quote, after finding a rate unreasonable, FERC shall determine the just and reasonable rate to be thereafter observed in full force. So it's there is no remedy that would have provided relief to capacity suppliers here. If you look at the joint appendix at JA 856, 858, 897, 912, and 914, that refutes counsel's claim that either FERC or the New York ISO did not look at this as something other than a compliance filing. They both directly refer to it as a compliance filing at those sites. And the third point is West Texas, if there are extraordinary circumstances, they are tied to harm to wholesale ratepayers. There was no harm to wholesale ratepayers in this case. FERC never referred to any such harm because it couldn't. So whether there were extraordinary circumstances because rates are hard to reset, that's not part of the standard under West Texas. And I'd suggest to you that it's not really so hard to reset the rates here. I'm not asking to rerun auctions. All you have to do is multiply megawatts times a price differential, and you're done. It should take probably about 15 minutes and to figure out a remedy here.
All right.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Very briefly, Your Honor, we think it's significant in this case that the solicitor did not try to apply the justification the commission did not provide in its orders that this matter was pending rehearing. The solicitor spends scant attention, it's brief on that, and it provided arguments that the commission did not rely on, that somehow the rates were in flux and not yet in use. You won't find that discussion in the commission order. As for the City of New York and Mr. Lowney's arguments, with all due respect, the same arguments that they make today about the New York laws and the governor signing laws, he could have made in ICNY, but he did not. Okay. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, gentlemen and ladies. Excuse me. The case is submitted.